The unemployment numbers today are evidence that I've seen firsthand as I travel the country, and that is too many people are losing their jobs as a result of a slowdown that began when Dick and I were campaigning across our country last summer. The slowdown is real, and it's affecting too many lives, and we're concerned about it.
About 100,000 lives, as a matter of fact. That was President Bush speaking yesterday outside the Oval Office because the U.S. Labor Department has released figures that show a lot of Americans out of work. From July to August, the unemployment rate has jumped from 4.5% to 4.9%. That is the biggest month-to-month increase in 6 years. Dan Schor is still off. Our friend John Heilman of Wired Magazine is back with us from our bureau in San Francisco. John, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Scott. You'll have to excuse me if I'm a little hoarse today. A couple days ago, I spent the day screaming with 40,000 of my fellow San Franciscans for Barry Bonds' 60th home run, and I know you'll have some sympathy for this malady, but do excuse me.
Did Barry Bonds hit his 60th? I've just been following Sammy Sosa. Oh, well, he's really up there now, isn't he? I guess there's a chance he could win this home run race. Well, we'll hear from Mr. Sosa later today. Listen, rather more grim are these unemployment figures. Should we start talking about a recession right here and now?
Well, I think so. You know, the funny thing about recessions is that you don't actually know you're in them until after they've started because of the way that the statistics work. Up until now, we've had a lot of mixed signals. You know, some parts of the economy, like manufacturing and high tech, have been clearly in recession for quite some time, for several quarters. Others, like the service sector, had been pretty healthy. Mm-hmm. But these new numbers in the last week have been pretty uniformly bad across the board. I mean, there are some signs that even in manufacturing we may have hit bottom. But, you know, even in the service sector, the numbers are pretty terrible. Maybe the most disconcerting thing is that we're starting to see the first signs that maybe consumer spending and consumer confidence are starting to turn down, mm-hmm. That people are putting off their purchases of big ticket items like cars and electronics and all that kind of stuff. That's really bad news because for the past few months, even though business has been cutting back on spending and investment, consumers have kept right on spending. And if they decide to stop spending, that is when we're going to clearly go hurtling right into a recession.
John, where do you turn to for the most reliable figures? Because different people seem to be keeping different books according to their interests.
Well, certainly in Washington, there's always been a battle of statistics and forecasts between primarily the Office of Management and Budget in the White House and the CBO. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, it's an independent, nonpartisan agency, and its numbers have historically been most conservative and therefore most reliable. The OMB numbers, depending on no matter who's in the White House, the OMB numbers are usually pretty thoroughly cooked by that lovely old Washington lady, Rosie Scenario. Up until this week, a pretty kind of familiar scenario had been playing out in a lot of ways. The Democrats were accusing the Bush administration of in fact, not using just numbers cooked up by Rosie Scenario, but numbers cooked up by her drunk half-sister, Peachy. That's how overly optimistic they thought those numbers were. But now, even the Bush administration now, the numbers are so bad that are coming in from outside Washington, mm-hmm. that the administration seems to have no choice but to change its tack. And now it's almost sort of embracing the recession in some ways. I mean, using the economy's mm-hmm. weakness to bolster, I think in the coming weeks, to bolster its case for perhaps even more tax cuts and for justifying what now seems to be inevitable, that is dipping into the Social Security surplus in its new budget.
Well, that was my next question. That locked box that Al Gore talked about is being pried open. I mean, Senate Majority Leader Daschle and President Bush certainly won't say that, will they? Not yet.
Well, not yet. The Senate Majority Leader and George Bush this week pledged once again not to touch the Social Security surplus. I think it's fair to say that anyone who believes that, I just would like to know what they're smoking and where I can get some. It's sort of a joke. The idea there's not a single serious nonpartisan budget expert or economist who doesn't believe that there's going to be some dipping into the surplus, that it's more or less inevitable unless the economy experiences some kind of miraculous Lazarus-like revival. The Bush administration now is even admitting as much. Yesterday, you know, there was this an emergency budget meeting at the White House when Mitch Daniels, the head of the OMB, who had been 2 days earlier saying, no, we'll never touch the Social Security surplus. Now he even privately is admitting to congressional Republicans that, yeah, we are going to have to touch it. And now the Republicans are all kind of gathering around to try to figure out how to put a reasonable face on that inevitable eventuality.
Mm-hmm. We ought to make plain when you talk about smoking. Don't touch cigarettes, John. They're bad for you.
Oh, okay. I'll try to steer clear of those, Scott. Thank you very much.
Listen, as a ranking expert on the government versus Microsoft, the Justice Department decided not to pursue the breakup of Microsoft this week, which had been legally mandated at one point. What's behind this decision and its timing?
Well, so in June, the Court of Appeals, which had heard this case on appeal, came down with its ruling. It ruled that Microsoft had, in fact, violated the law, the antitrust laws, in a number of important respects. But it did say that it was sending back the question of the remedy to a lower court. Now that lower court is about to start considering the question of the remedy. So the Bush administration was in a position where fairly soon it was going to have to come out and say what remedy it wants to see in the case. They saw the writing on the wall. They looked very carefully at what the appeals court had said. And though the appeals court didn't rule out the notion of a breakup, it hinted pretty strongly that it wouldn't accept one. And so in one sense, it looks like they sort of are doing, they're kind of bowing to the inevitable. But I think there's a little more to it than that. The Bush administration also gave up another important part of the case, which had to do with the integration of software into the Windows operating system. This was a central tenet of the Clinton administration's case. They believe that Microsoft was acting in an anti-competitive fashion in doing that stuff. The appeals court did not rule on it, but the Bush administration is now unilaterally disarmed. And I think there are a lot of cynics and many of Microsoft's competitors who would say that this is a sign the Bush administration is taking a dive on this case and is going to negotiate a settlement that lets Microsoft walk away with a slap on the wrist.
Let me ask you a question. There were experts in the case, principally you, who said that I remember telling this last year that the degree of competition in the industry had already risen. And in a case, in a certain way, this case had taken so long to put together that the circumstances which prompted it no longer existed. In other words, was actually prosecuting the case kind of a waste of effort and time and perhaps a lot of money?
Well, it's true that the actual issues that were prosecuted in the case, which had to do mainly with the browser and the browser wars, those are all long gone. But the basic kind of legal principles that are in question, do the antitrust laws apply to the high-tech industry? Is there such a thing as a monopoly in software? I mean, Bill Gates once told me that it was impossible to have a monopoly in software. You've now had two courts, a district court and an appeals court, that unanimously have said, no, it is possible to have a monopoly, and it's possible to abuse that monopoly, and that Microsoft did so. And I think that the value as precedent going forward for the high-tech economy is terribly important, regardless of how this case comes out in the short term.
John, the president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, made a state visit to Washington, D.C. this week, and he had an agenda. This wasn't just to shake hands. He pressed the U.S. government and this administration to liberalize immigration policy, which rather clearly would principally affect Mexico. How successful was his argument? How was he received?
Well, I think that Vicente Fox came down here and did make this argument. The Bush administration has been somewhat sympathetic. The Congress is deeply divided on the question, this immigration question. And I think there are some people who say that Fox, who was basically saying, look, we need an agreement by year end. There are some people who say he kind of overplayed his hand in a short-term tactical way. Mm-hmm. I think that sort of misses the bigger picture, though, which is that this visit was really pretty amazing in a lot of ways. I mean, this is Vicente Fox came down here really as the first really legitimately elected president of Mexico, the first opposition leader ever elected in a free and fair election. And for the first time, you have a Mexican leader who can stand in front of the Congress with no sense of inferiority, with a sense of real democratic legitimacy, and say, we're both Democrats, you and I, America and Mexico, and our countries are going to be bound together much more closely in the years ahead. I have the authority and the democratic legitimacy to talk to you. Let's get serious and bring a different kind of cooperation and a new kind of relationship together. Let's do business. And I think he was terribly impressive in that regard.
John, thanks very much.
Thanks, Scott.
John Heilemann of Wired Magazine speaking from San Francisco.